5th episode of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily, Radix's research and marketing executive, and today I'm joined by Fiona, who's our MD and lead copywriter here at Radix.
Hello.
We're also joined by one of our associate writers, David McGuire of Lungfish, for this episode.
Hello, it's nice to be back.
It's nice to have you back. This episode, we're going to be discussing succinct content, what links work and don't work in B2B content marketing. Plus, we'll be providing advice on how to keep copy links down. So first up today, I suppose I really want us to try and answer the question of how succinct content should be, obviously depending on format and kind of the audience and stuff. And the reason actually I've made this the subject of this month's podcast is because I saw a tweet a few weeks ago by Ben Goldmaker, and it was about the first paper on DNA structure, which was published all the way back in 1953, a groundbreaking piece of research by Watson and Crick, summarised in 800 words, changing the face of science as we know it.
Forever.
Forever, certainly in biology and our understanding of all life on this planet. So just what kind of content links should people be looking at for everything that kind of comes in for B2B? You know, especially in technology, because we've got a lot of types of content and links vary, and people's understandings of what might actually work for length vary.
Yeah, I think there's a kind of prevailing view at the moment that shorter is better, and that our audiences in B2B and B2B technology buyers don't have time to read great swathes of content, you know, great long white papers. They don't have time to sit through great long videos. But it might be really unfashionable, but I just don't agree with that at all. I don't think that shorter is always better. I think that you should be aiming at the right length for the content, the story, the point that you want to get across. And I don't think we should be looking at, you know, how short can we make this? I think we should be looking at how interesting can we make this, because the more interesting it is, the more people are likely to read or watch a longer piece of content.
I think that's interesting. I think as well as the content and the topic and what it's about, I think the other thing that is really crucial, as you said, is the audience and who they are and the context that they're reading in, the reason that they're reading something. You know, if they're reading something just out of interest because it's dropped in their inbox, the copy would need to be, you know, a lot shorter than something that, okay, they've taken time out because they are researching, you know, they're at an advanced stage in the buying process, say, and they're really looking to get under the skin and evaluate something. So it's thinking about the reader as well. It's how much time do they have? A lot of the time, they won't have much time. Sometimes they might.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think the copy that you use to get their attention should probably be quite short and get across what it is you're offering to them in the shortest possible way, so they can make a judgment there and then as to, is this something that I want to read or is this something that I want to watch? But the actual piece of content, I think, that you're promoting to them, I think it can be long as it's interesting and useful to them, as you say. I mean, I think people do have time. I mean, Hollywood films aren't getting shorter. You know, the Lord of the Rings, they managed to make 3 3-hour films out of that, and people went to see that. and they're doing the same with The Hobbit, so it's not as if people don't have time to sit through large chunks of what you might call content, as long as they're enjoying the experience and it's useful and or informative and or entertaining for them.
Yes, and that's key as well. I think that the temptation when something is long, you know, because you have all the space in the world, is that you can waffle. And I think that's the danger. If something can be long, but it's still within that structure, has to be well written, it has to be moving along, it has to be making its point. You know, some things I've read lately are quite long but repetitive, and they just kind of keep saying the same thing over and over again, and I'm kind of going, okay, I've got it now, can we skip on, we skip forward a bit please. And you know, thinking about one book in particular, but
in mentioning any names,
no. Certainly not.
I've seen that actually with I think it's Panorama. I'm sure the quality of that has gone downhill from when I was younger, because now if you look at something like Panorama, it's like they make the same point over and over again and labour this point. And you think, well, no, we've got that. It's time to move on now. But, you know, they keep coming back. to the same point.
Yes, it was interesting that you mentioned The Hobbit. Talking about things that are perhaps longer than they need to be.
Well, you know, it's debatable.
but that's the thing. You know, something could be long, but it still needs to be. You know, it still needs to be good. And I think that a lot of the time, the kind of side effect of writing something that's short is that you're thinking very clearly about making your point. So often a succinct way to make an individual point is also a very powerful way, you know, of doing it, to make it very straightforward. You know, the old George Orwell had his sort of his 5 rules for writing, and David Ogilvy had his 10 rules for writing. So he could have got it down to 5 like Orwell had he been more succinct. but Ogilvy said, never write more than 2 pages on anything. You know, obviously different context and writing for a different purpose. You know, and Orwell said, you know, if you can get by without a certain word, take it out. And while I don't necessarily, like you, I don't necessarily agree that shorter is always better, when I have to write something that's short, and we'll talk later about Twitter, I'm sure, but when I have to write something that's short, what I take out means that what's left has to be really good. And there's something about the discipline of that that can make for better copywriting.
I definitely agree, and there are all kinds of things you can do to make sure that your copy is succinct and clear and concise and you're not waffling. But I think at the same time you want to be sure you're producing something of value to your potential customer. And in the industry that we're in, the technology propositions that I suppose we have for people are very complicated. There's an awful lot to say that is of use and of value. So in order to get all of that across, you do often have to produce a longer piece of content, and you can't really pack it all into a 2-minute video or one side of A4. And I think there's quite a lot of focus these days on the wrong things. It's like, how many people can we get to watch this video? And if we make it, you know, 1 minute long, more people will watch it. Well, that might be the case, but what value are they taking from it? What are they getting from it? And what value is it delivering to you at the end of the day?
I think video is perhaps one of those examples where actually you do not want to make it longer, and longer than it necessarily needs to be, because it's weird. In some ways, video takes more effort to watch if you're obviously out and about. If we're thinking about people who perhaps are receiving content through mobile devices, and you wouldn't necessarily want to have something that's too long if there's a high chance it's going to be used, if it's going to be sort of viewed through a mobile device. And at the same time, if somebody's got to go through the effort of listening to this video, which will have audio, in a situation where they're maybe in an open office, they don't want to be disturbed or disturb other people, and they've got to sort things out so that they are able to watch this video, I wouldn't make it too long because of the amount of faffing around they might have to do. That's just me.
No, I think those are really good points. But then at the same time, I think a lot of people watch television programmes through things like iPlayer on laptops and tablets, and I think they're very happy with that. So I don't think video necessarily has to be very short just because somebody might be viewing it in the office or on a mobile device.
Do you think there's an argument, though, for, obviously harder to do in video, but going back to written stuff, to provide within something, if you know something's long, to make sure that there are easy takeaways from it, either in the structure on each page or in an executive summary, or in some way that if somebody's picking up something that's pages and pages and pages long, and really you just need them in 5 minutes, you know, they have 5 minutes, and you need them to understand the upshot of it, the so what, you know, the, you know, yes, you've gone through the argument and you've explained this benefit and so on, or, you know, the process and the how to, but just, you know, to make sure they can kind of take away the headlines from it if they need to.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is where design comes in, and design becomes really important. And I know we're working a lot more closely with designers than we ever have been in the past, to just ensure that when you're looking at a page, those key points do come out. So you're looking at sort of pulling out the key takeaways, and you're looking at really signposting the content that you've got. We're just looking at different ways of presenting the same kind of format. So We've been working with some design agencies to create interactive versions of a traditional white paper. So, I mean, the amount of copy is the same, but there is kind of signposting to the different sections of it. So you don't necessarily have to read the entire thing. You can skip, or click directly to the bit that interests you and only read that. So it's writing, I suppose, the same amount of copy, but ensuring that sections are self-contained if they need to be. So you can read the whole thing if you want, if it's all interesting to you, or you can just skip to the bits that are of most interest to you.
I think kind of a more old school version of that is if, you know, I'm writing for a brochure or some other kind of document, is that I'll often kind of think, you know, what's the, you know, if someone's got this in their hands, you know, imagine that, paper in people's hands. Yeah. If someone's got this in their hands, what's the 20-second version of this message? Mm. What's the 2-minute version of this message? And then what's the 20-minute version of this message? If someone's going to sit down and read it from cover to cover, you know, to make sense, they're going to understand all of it, is it going to keep them interested, is it going to take them along? But equally, if they are just flicking through the pages, picking up one or two bits from each page, and again, a lot of that's down to the design, you know, but whether it's images, whether it's breakout quotes, whether it's bullet points, headings, takeaways, you know, it, to make alongside and embedded within the long version, there's kind of a browsable short version. And then even then, kind of a micro version of if they literally spend 20 seconds going thumb through the pages, do they broadly understand what it's about? Do they broadly understand either why they might want to come and read it later in more depth, or to at least get the key message? This thing is good for that reason, or this is important for this reason, or whatever. But I try to build those, where I can, build those three levels in so that it works in more contexts for more people.
And that's also really good for if you're going to repurpose it across different platforms, I suppose. You know, if you're going to talk about it in a Facebook post, or if you're going to talk about it in a LinkedIn post, you've got that kind of succinct abstract that you can use to give an idea of what it's going to be about, and then to draw people in to the, you know, to the whole thing.
Well, yes, and things that are being read on a screen as well.
Yeah.
Because of the way people just, you know, can just scan down a page.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
The majority of people do. I can't remember the specific research, but there was research released last year that looked at how people interact with web copy and just whether or not they do truly read through something, and the sort of links that we're looking at. And I think it was more of a journalism type article, but even journalistic articles where you think somebody's reading it for entertainment enjoyment, there's still a huge chance they're just going to scan like it is, and it becomes an even worse issue for something like reviews that happen to use a form of scoring system.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, right, down to the summary.
Yeah.
I mean, some of that eye tracking research is really interesting, and now people, you looking at more things online and the way, you know, social media and blogs, the structure on the page is different. So the classic kind of F-shaped eye tracking of what people look on a page is changing, and it's kind of interesting now how what people expect to see on that page and where they will look rather than reading everything all the way through. Just to pick up on what you were saying, Fiona, I mean, do you literally, is there any piece of copy that's too long?
I think a piece of copy is too long when it ceases to be interesting and people don't read beyond the first page or a couple of pages. So as an example, I mean, we recently had a client who asked us to give some feedback on a white paper that some colleagues of his had produced. And this was it's the longest white paper I've ever seen. I think it was 35 pages long. I think he wanted us to say, you know, this is far too long and nobody's going to read all this. You know, it's deathly boring. Nobody's going to read the whole 35 pages. But actually, the way it was laid out, there was a lot of great signposting at the beginning. I mean, it was a great table of contents that it had. So you could quite easily run your eye down that and see the sections that you were interested in and see what was going to be covered in each of these sections and just literally go to the bits that interested you. So I think a thing can be long and you don't maybe have to read all of it, as I was saying before. I think, you know, if the signposting is there, and I think the signposting is really, really important, then can be long. If somebody's interested in the whole thing, they can read the whole thing or just go to the bits that are useful.
Going back to videos again, because I love them dearly. Obviously with the sort of the release of Vine as at all, not just for consumers who want to make groovy short videos, but also for marketers. And David, I've heard that you've been doing some scripts for Vine videos. Are they too short for B2B, or can they be actually the right length for getting certain messages across?
Well, I think, yeah, it's kind of, it's the equivalent of saying, is a tweet too long to get a point across? It's about making one point, making it well in kind of a creative way that, you know, that catches the eye. I love Vine. I think Vine is just ripe with possibilities, just because of the whole, it's so short, and the whole looping thing, and it's so simple. I really don't know why it hasn't taken off more than it has. I think it might be to do with the sharing, the way it's embedded in the other kind of the social networks. It could be to do with them not having the browsing or the hashtagging for it quite right yet. But I don't think it's to do with the length. I think the length is absolutely an asset.
They say it's 6 seconds, but I was looking it up earlier, and it's actually something closer to 6.5 seconds. Somebody did a road test with timers being filmed to show how much footage you've actually potentially got available, and it was something like sort of 6.28 seconds or something. Well, 6.3 something seconds. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it could be less than that, but you know, when you actually kind of look at some of the editors' picks, the things that people get across and the little stories that they can tell in 6 seconds, you know, it's great. I think it's about finding one thing and expressing it really clearly.
I think there's also thinking about the possibilities of Vine, and also what have been done with sort of more traditional video formats on something like YouTube. And there is a tendency for brands to create series or episodes of videos. And in the way, that in itself is a commentary on length. Is that when people start getting episodic about their videos, is that perhaps pushing the boundaries just a little too much?
Maybe. I think the thing with a Vine is because it sort of loops, it stands alone. So you could do a series of standalone Vines that follow a certain theme or follow a format or have a certain punchline or whatever, in the same way as you could in a sketch show. It would work like that, but in order to say, see what happens in the next 6 seconds, do this, go here, see what happens in the next 6 seconds, do that. It wouldn't work because the amount of effort required to find the next 6 seconds, you know, for a 20-second video, you know, you'd go up, you know, have to go back 3-4 times.
But we did see that really lovely example where someone had taken a whole load of little Vine videos,
yes,
and put them into that comic strip format, so that you had them all on the panels in front of you.
In an actual sort of proper panelled page on a website, which was really
awesome.
Was
really lovely.
I saw that.
Creative use of it, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's perhaps the only way we can get away with properly episodic Vine, but that's because they're using it to tell a sort of visual story to begin with anyway. But I'm thinking more, if we go away from Vine for a minute, just sort of like with things like YouTube videos, which are obviously longer videos, and we're talking a couple of minutes or more per video. So what I'm trying to say is, perhaps, is there a limit to how episodic longer videos could be? Because to me, there's some point, if you've got a brand who's telling a fictional story that works around either their brand or their product, and they're almost trying to make their own media series out of it, that is perhaps pushing the format a little too far and perhaps in the wrong direction. Because you're probably going to get decreasing views as the more the episodes sort of come out anyway.
I think if people know that it's a brand that's behind it and the brand is fairly prominent in the videos, it's going to take a lot to get them away from the idea that they're being sold to and the fact that they want to watch these videos just for the pure entertainment value of them. So I saw quite a few years back, there was a car company, I can't remember which one, had got a very reputable comedy production company to create a long series of an awful lot of videos which were done in a kind of sitcom format, and the car appeared in each of them. And even though it was pretty well done and it was quite funny, you could never get away from the thought that, you know, this car's always there, these people are trying to sell me a car, and I really, you know, resist watching something like that just because I know that they're trying to sell to me.
I have seen also a video series or two from a particular enterprise security software vendor that was episodic in nature and was just showing the slow sort of derailment of a fictional enterprise's security for their information systems. And every episode, everything had got worse, and they were like obviously trying to work up to sort of like really promoting the brand sort of at the end of each episode, but then the next episode things still weren't right and things were going horribly wrong. And I just thought it was pushing the whole episodic format just too far.
Something like that has to be really good to keep you watching all the way to the end. Whereas instead of it being episodic, but something that's riffing on a theme or a format can work really well. I mean, YouTube. I mean, if you think of the Old Spice campaign that they did with the, you know, the guy would, you know, be people would be tweeting him and he'd be responding to them in video. You know, that was fabulous, and individual short videos were getting millions of views, and that's actually something where I think that kind of format, Vine, might work, because you've got the hashtagging, so it's easy to grab all of the videos on a topic or in a certain format and put them all in one place and just click through them.
So I wanted to spend the last part of this episode discussing sort of hints and tips on how people can try to get their copy lengths down.
I think from a writing point of view, really it's a question of practice, and the place I practice most is Twitter. It's just the discipline of that 140 character limit. It's so brutal, it's so non-negotiable. So conveying one idea within that framework, I have to work really hard at it. Sometimes I'll write something that's 300 characters long and pare it down. And when I do that, it makes every word, every character within the tweet more intense, because everything has to pull its weight. There's no, and particularly if it's a tricky thing that you're looking, you know, an idea that you're looking to convey, there's no space for, you know, a passive sentence structure or kind of nominalized verbs, things, you know, there's just no space for any of that stuff. And just doing that repetitively just gets me into really good habits. I mean, Twitter's the equivalent of going to the gym for a writer.
And I absolutely agree with you, and I was amazed when I first started using Twitter, having been a copywriter for years and years and years, thinking, this is going to be easy, and amazed at finding how difficult it actually was to get a thought or an idea down into that 140 characters. I think you're in good company, because I saw a video interview with the editor of the FT the other day, Lionel Barber, in which he said Twitter had helped him relearn the art of writing a headline. So definitely very good practice for getting copy down to be very succinct. And beyond that, I think copywriters need to pay a lot more attention to formatting and how the copy is actually going to look on the screen, because it's most likely it's going to be read on a screen now rather than on a printed piece of paper. So it's just looking at how can you sort of split it up into shorter chunks, how can you use things like subheaders, how can you use bullets, and how, if you're working with a designer, how can you use the design to make the copy more appealing and more readable on the page. So those would be my tips. And look, I mean, read a lot yourself, read a lot online and see what's grabbing your attention. What things are you reading to the end? And think, why am I reading this to the end? What is it that's drawing me in and making me want to read more? And often it's not just the copy, it's the way it's been formatted and laid out on the screen, on the page.
That's all we've got time for this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for the latest copywriting tips and insights. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.